Hey friends, it's Coach Andrea. Welcome to another episode of Blow the Whistle. I hope that you enjoyed all of the conversations around mental health for Mental Health Awareness Month. Today we are kicking off summer in full swing, June 1st, halfway through the year. How's your year going so far? Is it turning out as you anticipated? Or do you feel like you've gotten off track a little bit? Have you set some intentions that you have yet to fulfill or live up to? What's been the most powerful thing that you've learned this year? If tomorrow were your last day, have you spent the time the way that you wanted to? Those are just some questions to stop and ponder and think about, because we know that when we get into the second half of the year, it's kind of like your gas tank. That first half seems to go by slowly, but the second half of the year, with summer being off schedule, kids are out of school, and then the end of the year with the holidays, things just seem to fly by. I know for me, I have some things on my agenda that I have yet to accomplish. So I will be spending the summer resetting and refocusing so that I can be intentional about the way that I end the second half of the year. What are we talking about today as we kick off June? Well, I've been having this conversation a lot about being a victim, a survivor, and a thriver. So that's where we're going to go today. Without further ado, it's time for another episode of Blow the Whistle. I want to share a little background of how I came to want to talk about this on the podcast. I have so many clients and people that I hear and just spaces that I sit in, and I hear people say, I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to be a victim. And I think being a victim has gotten a really bad rap in our society. There are people who are actual victims who refuse to call themselves that because of the negative connotation that comes with being a victim. When someone does something to you that violates your safety or your space or takes something from you without your authority or permission, you are victimized in some way. It could be a carjacking, it could be a theft, it could be abuse, it could be betrayal. All of those are things that create victimization. Now, there's nothing wrong with saying, I've been victimized in this way. And I know what people are pushing up against. They're pushing up this idea that I don't want to live in victimhood. And we will get to that. But I think it's so important that we don't try to move beyond that victim state, just that recognition that something bad or something awful has happened to you, that you've experienced something that has left a mark on you. Until you can acknowledge that, it's very difficult to heal well. And so many people want to push through the victim stage to get to the survivor and the thriver stage. But that first stage really sets the foundation or the precedence for how you move through the process from survivor to thriver. And then some people say, I don't call me survivor. You know, I don't want to be a survivor. You don't have to stay there either. You move through that place in the beginning where you are just surviving, where you're showing up in your life every day. Maybe you feel like a mess. But the fact that you keep getting up, you keep showing up, you keep moving forward, you're committed to your healing, that's what leads you to thriving. I've never met anyone who got to the stage of thriving or what we would call post-traumatic growth without having done the work to get there. I've seen people fake it, who pretend, who bypass their way, and think that they've arrived at this place, and then something big happens in their life and they realize, oh, I didn't actually do the work to heal. So just hearing that negative connotation on the victim made me say, you know, this is something that we need to talk about. There's nothing wrong with saying that you've been victimized in some way. So you already know what I had to do, which is what I always do. Go to the dictionary and look up the definition of a victim. A victim is a person harmed, injured, or killed as a result of a crime, accident, or other event or action. A person who is tricked or duped, the victim of a hoax. So to fall victim to means to be hurt, killed, damaged, or destroyed by. Again, there's nothing negative in that. It's simply naming that something has happened that has harmed, injured, or killed a person as a result of a crime, accident, or other event. And I want to just like dispel some myths, some common myths that I hear with this term victim. People are really afraid that if I admit that I am a victim, that I'm like saying that, you know, there's nothing I can do about it, or I'm powerless or helpless to change anything about the situation. And that's not actually true. Just acknowledging again what's actually happened, being able to name it, living in the truth and the reality of the situation is actually the starting point to be able to move through that. Again, you have to move through it. You can't bypass it. Someone asked me, what's a spiritual bypass? And I said, you know, imagine that there's a really dark, muddy, stinky valley that you have to go through. And you don't want to go through that valley. You only want to get to what's beyond the valley. And so you use something to build a bridge to avoid having to go through this really hard, messy, stinky place. For some people, they build that bridge with scripture, which is what we would call a spiritual bypass, right? They can quote every scripture. God works it all together for good. I'm blessed. I'm grateful. You know, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. All of those things are true. And if you don't go through the middle, if you don't go through the valley, then you're really just allowing yourself to skip a vital part of the process. We know that biblically, the Bible talks so much about suffering and what suffering does to us and for us as humans. And I think it's common across all religions, all spheres of motivation and positivity. We understand that it's the hardships, the things that refine us, that strengthen us, that prepare us for what is on the other side of the valley. And so saying that you're a victim of something, that you experienced something that was harmful or injuring to you, is important, because if you don't acknowledge that, how can you grieve it? How can you properly give the weight to what has happened? And how do you then express that and seek the proper care if you're not willing to really admit where you're injured? It's like going to the doctor and saying that you have a cold when you really have lung cancer. And I really want to change this narrative around being a victim. At some point in our lives, all of us have been a victim to something or someone. But I think this is so important when we talk about betrayal, because no one wants to get stuck in that place of victim. And again, that's what I call victimhood. So you're not trying to set up camp there and build a house there and build a community with other people who, that's the only thing they know. It's like, this awful thing happened to me, but they don't have the energy or the effort or the drive or the understanding that because something happened to you, you don't have control of that. But then what you do with that is what is within your power. You had no control over what someone did to you. but you do have control over your choices after that. And again, I'm not saying that to minimize anyone's experience, to say you have to get up and go as soon as something happens. When you've been victimized, you need time to stay there, to process what's happened. Again, to go through that grief and the shock that we all experience when we are victimized in some way. Growing up, we lived in a nice house that was in a not so nice neighborhood. And what would happen is we would come home and things would just be everywhere, that someone had been in our house. They had stolen our things. They had rummaged through all of our clothes, like dumped out drawers. And that experience was really traumatic as a kid. I remember seeing the horror on my mom's face as she just looked at the mess. I remember feeling powerless and helpless as a kid to really do anything, and really feeling unsafe in that experience. And it wasn't until I became an adult that and started really doing my own therapeutic work that I realized that was a trauma for me, that we were victims of robbery, and that it really was a violation of our safety, and how unsafe I felt most of the time as a kid when we lived in that house. And so when you are in a situation like betrayal, especially intimate partner betrayal, it's very hard to say, I am a victim of my spouse's choices, to look at the person that you committed to love and do life with and realize that they are actually the ones that's harming you. And I'm not saying that to shame anyone. So if you are the person who has victimized your spouse, this isn't to say, you know, you're an awful person. But again, it's about acknowledging what has happened, and that the person who is victimized has to have a right to say, this hurt me, and it hurt me in these ways, and to be able to name that and grieve that and be angry about that and decide how they want to seek healing and move forward. When you look at the research of what happens to victims of, say, something like rape, when they are silenced, there are a lot of negative consequences from that. So imagine when a person silences themselves, when they don't feel safe or comfortable to acknowledge what has happened because of the negative connotations that we have around the word victim. We know that victim blaming is huge, and so many spouses experience this. You know, what the message that I grew up was, if you don't keep your man happy, someone else will. It's your job to keep your man satisfied. If you don't keep him satisfied, he'll go out the house. Don't ever let your man leave the house hungry. And that wasn't just about food. So the responsibility for not being cheated on was placed on the woman. And it's similar, very similar in rape culture. What were you wearing? Why were you there? Why did you do this? Did you lead him on? And so many people don't want to even speak out or share or say, hey, I'm a victim of this, because of situations where there's victim blaming. And that can feel like a re-victimization. It's like I'm re-experiencing this trauma. Who's going to lash out at me for telling the truth about this or speaking about this? But the more that we speak out, the more that we tell the truth of our story, and it's so important that you narrate your own story, that you and your voice are able to say, hey, this awful thing happened to me. Here's how I experienced it. Here's how it harmed me. And here's the result of that. Here's how it's still impacting my life today. And again, a big part of my wanting to have this conversation is because I want to debunk this myth that after a certain point, you're healed and you're no longer impacted by what has happened to you. And we just know that that's not true. When you experience intimate partner betrayal, you are forever changed by that experience. And sometimes the betrayer may say, it's been a year, it's been 2 years, it's been 3 years. And I ask, how long were you betraying her? How long were you acting out? How long were you victimizing her? Even if she didn't have a conscious awareness of it, and I'm saying she, I understand that men are experience betrayal as well. But for the most part, most of my clients, I actually do have some clients who are female betrayers, but the majority of my clients, it's the male who does the betraying. So if you are a male partner, this is true for you as well, that it's very hard to say that you're a victim of betrayal, because in our society, men are supposed to be the strong, fierce protectors. And, you know, if you allow your wife to cheat on you, you're weak, and all the negative connotations that come with that. But again, it's like, how do you want to tell your story? Other people can have their narrative, but you don't have to live out of other people's narrative. It doesn't have to be your truth. So what's your truth? The truth is that you are a victim of betrayal. Now, what do you do with that experience? How do you move beyond the victim stage? And again, it's not an X amount of time. There's no quick process through it. It is acknowledging it, naming it, and really grieving your way through it. And I think the most important thing of saying, yes, you are a victim, is that you give other people the permission to do the same. We saw this so much with the Me Too movement, where once people started speaking out, other people had the courage to speak up as well. And that's where the Me Too movement was born. We are so far behind in being able to understand the impact of betrayal on a partner, the long-term effects. When you talk about domestic violence, you know, there's no day for victims of betrayal. There's no, you know, foundation that really says today we honor those who've experienced betrayal. I actually would love to see that when we talk about justice. I think that would be one of the most powerful things that we could do, to have a day where we honor partners, where we honor people who have walked through the journey of betrayal and are still committed to not only their healing, but the healing of others. So if that's you and you're listening and you're like, I've never given myself permission to call myself a victim, or other people have not given me permission to call myself a victim, I want you to take your voice back, to use your voice and say, I am a victim of intimate partner betrayal. Again, it doesn't mean that you stay there, but just as survivors and thrivers after rape or other tragic experiences, you know, like I mentioned being robbed as a kid, I was a victim of that. I was a victim of theft. But today, I don't stay in that place. But when I'm talking to other people and they're sharing their experience, I say, yes, I've experienced that too. And just giving each other permission to say, yes, me too, is really powerful. I want to say this especially to the betrayer, the person who did the betraying. You also have a story of being a victim. I can probably count on one hand the number of clients that I've seen that haven't experienced some trauma, been a victim of some type of abuse or neglect, who really have a hard time saying, Yes, I experienced these things in my childhood. I'm a victim of these things from my childhood and find it really hard to acknowledge that because they feel like I don't have a right to or I don't deserve to. Now, let me be clear, your partner probably doesn't want to hear that at first, but as you're doing your own individual work, it is very important that you are able to share all the parts of your story that led you to where you are today. And just as I said for the betrayed partner, being able to share their story gives other people the courage to do the same. The same is true for the betrayer. I've seen men in groups really listen to another person's story and say, "Wow, I experienced that same thing and I never thought about how it impacted me. I didn't consider that that shaped me or formed me in some way that led me down this path." And again, that doesn't excuse the choices, but it does paint a picture of, okay, how did I get to this place that I never thought I would be? I've never heard a person say, "Yeah, I mean, I decided as a kid that when I grew up, I was going to cheat on my wife. I was going to betray my wife." Nobody writes that into part of their story. And so when you're doing your work, unpacking, your own story, and you're trying to understand how did you get to this place? It's so important that you acknowledge your own victim story as well. What does it mean to be a survivor? A survivor is a person who survives, especially a person remaining alive after an event in which others have died. Or a person who has experienced abuse or cruel treatment. Another definition says a person who copes well with difficulties in their life. We hear a lot about survivors and their resilience and their strength and their ability to push through. But what I want to say is important about this stage is that you don't lean on just sheer strength, right? I know grit is popular right now. The grind culture is popular right now, but we are human beings. We are not robots. You hear me say that all the time. And so what does it mean to be a human being to experience something that could potentially cause death? That definitely causes harm and to survive that. Think about someone that is in a car accident and they survive, but they're seriously injured and they want to use sheer grit and strength to push through. That may aid in the healing, but that's not all that's going to be needed in the healing. What's going to be needed in the healing is proper medical treatment, time for rest, maybe some surgery, different interventions, maybe some medicine. You might need br a brace or stitches. There's so many things that go into being a survivor of something that you've been a victim of. And again, survivor gets a bad rap. People put a negative label on that. Oh, I don't want to be that. We all want to be on top of the mountain, shaking our fist. Yes, I did it. But there's something about the journey that can't be ignored, and the perseverance that it takes to show up in your life every day. And to choose your own healing, to choose to sit with your pain and your grief and your sorrow and your disappointment and your hurt and your loss and not try to rush yourself through it. I can't say enough about the power of self-compassion and how it aids in healing. No one heals from being criticized, no one heals from constant badgering. We all need that sense of compassion that it's okay for us to embrace our humanity. And some people, get to the point where they're like, I feel like this is all I'm doing every day. I hear this so much, especially early in recovery. I don't feel like myself. I feel like all I'm doing is surviving. And I say over and over and over again, and that is enough. If you got up and you breathed, that is enough. If you got out of your bed and you brushed your teeth, that is enough. Every day is not about grinding, pushing through, trying to propel yourself to get back to life as you knew it. Again, using the analogy of being in a car accident, there's no way that you would heal properly if you were insistent with the doctors that no, you just had to get up and start running again. And the hard part about grief and being a victim is that the rest of the world is still going. You're the one that has to step off the treadmill of life. You're the one who gets sidelined and you sit and you watch the rest of the world go by. But you are allowing yourself time to heal. You are giving yourself what you need so that when you are ready to get back up, when you are ready to get back out there, you are doing it from the best place possible. And that doesn't mean that you won't still have wounding. That doesn't mean that you won't still struggle, but at least you're acknowledging that and you're giving yourself the space to say, hey, this is something that happened to me and I am still surviving it. When I think about the list of experiences that I still have as a result of betrayal, sometimes it can be very disheartening because I'm like, everything now is, seen through that lens. I don't know if what I'm experiencing is as a result of my trauma. Is it my age? Is it something else? But I know that the person that I was before betrayal is definitely not the person that I am. So I am still a survivor. I'm still surviving. I'm still trying to get my full brain capacity back. I'm still trying to get my ability to multitask. And I don't mean unreasonably. I mean, just sometimes I find myself getting overwhelmed a lot quicker than I did in the past. I can't do, as many things as I used to. And that has been a great loss for me. I still have sometimes nightmares or, experiences, flashbacks, triggers, and I'm still doing my work. But almost 10 years later, these are a part of my survival experience. And so I just want to say that because I want to normalize what it really looks like to heal. It's not magic. It's not a formula. It's not a sprint. You're not going to get there quickly. So 10, 20, 30 years down the road, you may still be experiencing some of these things. And people say, oh, I hope not. I just want to be free from it. When you go through something as traumatic as betrayal, I don't know how it cannot impact you. I don't know how you can dismiss yourself from it other than by dissociating or living in denial. It will always be a part of who you are and a part of your story. And that's not a bad thing because, again, sharing your story with someone and saying, I survived this when I thought I wouldn't. I know for me, there were many, many, many days that I felt like I just couldn't catch my breath. Like the weight of the grief and the pain was so crushing that I didn't know if I was going to be able to breathe. I didn't want to die, but I just didn't know if I would be able to live because the pain was so intense. And so for me, being a survivor is not something that I'm ashamed of. I am proud of myself. I'm proud of all the partners who get up every day, not showing up perfectly, but just continuing the journey, being committed to their own healing. And that's true whether your marriage survives or doesn't survive. You deserve to survive. You deserve to reclaim yourself. You deserve to move through the experience and not feel stuck or trapped in that place of victim. You know, when we look at in being victimized, we are powerless and helpless over what another person chooses to do to us. When we move into that survival stage, it's like, okay, I have choices. I can acknowledge my choices. I may feel overwhelmed or confused. Some of my choices may seem impossible. None of them may look good, but I at least acknowledge that there's a path forward, that I don't have to stay in this place of being powerless and helpless over this thing that I experienced, that I can move to a different place, that there's something ahead of me, even if I'm crawling, even if I am, you know, like I said, really struggling to show up every day. It's not about being your best self or faking it until you make it. A lot of these things that we hear in our culture and so much of social media, and sometimes when we hear people's stories, and I want to say this is especially true in a church setting. We hear someone's story and we're like, oh, look at them. And, you know, look how quickly they forgave and they moved on. Most of the time, we don't hear about the messy middle. We don't hear about the days that person couldn't get up. We don't hear about when they wanted to throw in the towel or give up. And sometimes letting go, I don't like to call it giving up, but letting go, not holding so tightly to what we think the outcome should be. Letting go and taking care of ourselves is the best thing that we can do. Not trying to push through the pain and will ourselves to be better. Allowing other people to come alongside and care for us is vital when we're in this survivor stage. And, you know, when I was reflecting on preparing for this podcast, I remember some of the things that were so helpful to me. I had to let my kids know that I was in a state of healing and that I still wanted to do fun things and exciting things with them, but that I couldn't do them to the capacity that I did before. And I had to let them know that it had nothing to do with them, but that I needed time for my heart to heal. It was heartbreaking to see their faces, for them to say, oh, let's go do this, or remember when we would do that. And I felt like I was letting them down in so many ways. But in hindsight, I recognize what I was doing is modeling for them what it looks like to take care of yourself. I was modeling for them what it looks like to show yourself compassion and to be able to speak up for yourself and say, I need to slow down. I need to rest. And again, I want to say this to partners who are used to being the savior and the fixer and the one who shows up for everything and everyone. That is not sustainable. It's not sustainable even without betrayal, but it's definitely not sustainable after betrayal. And one of the gifts, I say all of the time, one of the gifts that I got as a result of doing my recovery work was the ability to say no, to set boundaries, to not need to show up for everything and everyone, the ability to change my mind that I know I said, yes, I would be there, but I just can't do it. And I had to do that so many times. There were funerals that I missed, celebrations that I missed. I remember one in particular, my uncle passed away and I was very close to my uncle, my dad's brother. And he passed away and the funeral was planned right at a time where I was supposed to go away with my girlfriends for this conference. And when I say I was hanging on by a thread, wanting to get to this conference, but it would mean missing my uncle's funeral. And I chose to go to the conference. I saw my uncle the day before he died. I spent time with my family before I left. But I knew that going to that funeral was going to be another emotional drain on me. It was going to require me to show up for my family in a way that I just couldn't. And so I chose myself. And I don't have any regrets about that. So sometimes you have to make those hard choices when you're in that stage of surviving that you disappoint people in order to take care of yourself. People will move beyond their disappointment, but if you push yourself beyond what's healthy and what's realistic, you can prolong your healing. So learning some good habits in that survival stage is so critical. I think about when my kids were little and I was sleep deprived and like barely surviving that. It was like my expectations went way down. I just was like, is everybody alive? If I could keep everybody alive, that was the standard. I didn't worry about baths. I didn't worry about what we ate. It was like, I'm just going to do the bare minimum to keep us alive. And sometimes that's where you are after betrayal, is you're doing the bare minimum to stay alive. And that is okay. As long as you keep showing up in your life, as long as you keep doing the things that you need to do to heal, there's nothing wrong with you choosing survival. How do you move into thriving? This is something that I want for all of my partners. It's something I want for all of the betrayers in recovery. I want everybody to get to the point where they really feel like they're thriving. What does it mean to thrive? It means to prosper or to flourish. I think last week on the podcast, I mentioned that when God said, be fruitful and multiply, the fruitful, when you look up the word in the Hebrew, is really about flourishing and blossoming. So, how do you get to the point where you've become a victim of something and then you move into that survival state where you're showing up in your life? You're not trying to exceed any expectations. You're probably doing the bare minimum. You're giving yourself time to heal and grieve and really process what's happened to you. How do you then take that and move into thriving, move into a place where you're flourishing? Again, I cannot stress enough the importance of being in charge of your own story. If you allow other people to tell you what your story is, it's very difficult to move into that thriving stage. That's why it's so important for partners to write that emotionally focused impact letter, even if they never get to read it to their spouse. That's why it's important for guys to do their first step and write out their stories, because we need to see that narrative written out to decide how do we move into the next chapter? How do I take all of these things that have happened to me that are part of my experience and use them to help grow me? So I want to share two, maybe three things that I think are so powerful and so necessary, in addition to what I've already shared about moving through those stages from victim to survivor, to really get to this place where you're thriving. The first thing that I would say is so critical is that you shift your perspective from this person did this horrible thing to me, and now all of your energy is directed at this person. Yes, they did do it, but God allowed it. And so, what if God is faithful, and I believe He is, and if God is good, why would God allow something so horrible to come into your life? God is not a masochist. He doesn't allow, I mean, He doesn't enjoy seeing us experience pain. And He does make some promises about when hard things come into our lives. You know, I think about Isaiah 43:19, which was one of the verses, I'm sorry, it's not 19, it's the, I think it's like verse 2, where he talks about, you know, when you go through the fire, I will be with you. And when you go through the floods, I will not, they will not overwhelm you. And knowing, okay, God's taking me through this for a reason. He's not just punishing me or wanting to see me hurt. Yeah, it's Isaiah 43:2. He's not wanting to just see me hurt. He's doing something in it. What is he doing in it? God is showing us his faithfulness. He's showing us that he is our true source, that our help, our strength, our ability to rest, and to let him be in charge of our lives. When we can really surrender to that and let go of the false notion that we have some control over what happens to us, but that we allow God to take that and bring something good from it. And I don't know any way to move to thriving apart from allowing God to do that. And when I say moving into thriving, I mean in a really healthy way, to where you're not trading one thing for another. So you're not trading addictions, you know, you're not going from pornography to now gambling or excessively exercising or drinking too much. You're not going from betrayal and surviving to now, you know, really finding strength in your anger or closing people out or excessive shopping, but that you really come to a place where you can see some growth, some good growth, some beautiful growth, something that you are proud of. I don't know how you can get there again without shifting the narrative. That's what Joseph said to his brothers in Genesis when he said, "You meant this for evil, but God meant it for good." He said, God meant it. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't like, oops, caught God off guard. God meant it to bring something good. So Genesis 50:20 is the verse. And I want to read it to you from a couple of different translations. The New Living Translation says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people. As for you," this is the Berean Standard Bible, "as for you, what you intended against me for evil, God intended for good in order to accomplish a day like this." The Amplified Bible, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present outcome that many people would be kept alive." So whether you are the betrayer or the betrayed, how do you move into a place of thriving? That is shifting your attention to God, keeping your eyes fixed on him, knowing that this did not catch him off guard or by accident, and that he has a plan in it. I was sharing with someone today that, and you've heard me say this many, many, many times, the verse that God gave me prior to discovering betrayal was Psalm 18:30, which is, "Ask for the Lord, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is flawless. He is a shield for all who take refuge in him." That verse has carried me through. I haven't seen all the fruit that will come as a result of this journey, but I believe God for so many things. Some of the ways that I've seen him work is providing for me and my children. The fact that I'm here, the fact that I get to do this work every day and help other people. God means to bring good from all the evil that comes against us in this world, whether it is from childhood, whether it's from adulthood, whether it's from someone we know or someone we don't know. God means to bring good from it in order that we can turn around and help other people. And when you are trying to move into this stage of thriving, again, it can be so easy to just like, oh, now I want to take my story and I can help people. Well, you want to be able to say, I'm helping from a place of doing my own work, that I'm not using the helping as a way to bypass my work, that I'm not using the helping as a way to ignore my own pain and suffering, that my helping is the birthed from the work that I've done myself. And so it's so important not to, again, try to bypass that. So that's the first thing I would say when you want to thrive, is really shifting your focus. Again, whether you're the betrayer or the betrayed, you have to take your focus off of people and really look at God and ask him, what is he doing in this process? What good does he mean to bring out of it? And then the second thing I would say is consistency. Betrayed or a betrayer, you have to be consistent. I showed up in my group every week, whether I wanted to or not. I tried really hard not to miss it. I showed up in my therapy, whether I wanted to or not. I read books. I listen to podcasts. Now, it can be all consuming when you're in the beginning of recovery. You just want to read and know everything and feel like you have to saturate yourself in that. But it's so important to try to balance that with still living your life, still getting out, trying to have some sort of fun, deciding what does it look like for you to have good boundaries, but just being consistent to show up in your own life in a way that feels like good and right for you. Again, not dictated by someone else or feeling like you're doing it for someone else. It has to be for you. You have to decide that you are worth moving from surviving to thriving, that you are worth the work, that all the effort and energy that you put into your addiction or that you put into your marriage, that you put into whatever else you were doing, your children and all those things, that you as an individual are worth the work. Not giving up on yourself, having people around you who can support and encourage you when you feel tired. And that really gets into the third thing that I think is essential to thriving, and that is having people around you. If you go through your entire recovery process and you don't develop a support system, you don't find safe people, you don't build connections and healthy relationships, you may enter into the thriving, but I don't know how you sustain it. Life is so hard. It's so hard to be human on this side of heaven. And so we need other people to come alongside us, to be with us. This is why God said it's not good for man to be alone, because he knows how hard it is to live in this world and to try and do it alone. So it said that we are wounded in relationship and we also heal in relationship. And so we need each other. We need people to link arms with us. We need to find people who get us and who can encourage us and lift us up along the way. Ecclesiastes 4:9-12 says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. These people who come alongside you may not be your spouse. They may not be the person that you thought would come alongside you. The people who supported me most were complete strangers when I entered my recovery journey. I had some friends who thankfully were lifelong friends and came alongside me as well. But a lot of those people that I now consider a huge part of my support were strangers to me when I started my recovery journey. And so if you want to move into thriving, if you don't find safe men and safe women, safe people that you can share that story with, who encourage you, who help you, when you feel exhausted and like you can't go on, who can help you up when you fall down. Again, I don't know how you sustain thriving. You may see some buds come up, you may see some growth, but I don't think that it's sustainable long term. So if you feel isolated, if you feel like you don't have anyone, please reach out to me, join a group. There's so many good groups available now, that weren't even available when I first started recovery. So many safe spaces, so many betrayed partners who have now started groups, or betrayers who are leading groups who help come alongside and encourage and uplift. There's so many APSATS trained clinicians and coaches that are available out there. And if you struggle to have money to pay for those services, there are free groups. There are coaches and clinicians who offer discounted rates. There's so much available on the internet and YouTube, but you cannot move beyond the human experience, the chance to look into another person's face, the chance to listen and be heard, and to be able to share your story in a space that feels safe. And we saw through COVID that yes, in person is great, but sometimes we have to make those connections online. And I know that I am a person who really needs physical touch. So having a group in person was important for me, someone that I could hug. I led some groups, and these women were all over the United States, and they made a plan to come together and meet up in a central location just so they could all see each other face to face. This is what it looks like to thrive, that you are willing to move beyond your comfort zone, that you're willing to push through obstacles and difficulties to go after what you need in order to heal. So, if I can encourage you in those three things, which are to not focus so much on the person, and again, this is in the thriving stage, so I'm not talking about in the beginning. You need to focus again as a victim on what's happened to you. Not talking about this in the surviving stage. I'm talking about how do you move from surviving to thriving, and that is looking at God and asking Him what good does He mean to bring out of it. The second thing is being consistent, showing up for yourself, doing it for you, knowing that you're worth it, getting in touch with your true identity, letting go of the lies and things that you've believed, really doing the work to heal your traumas, not just the trauma of betrayal, but traumas from childhood and other stages of life. And then the third thing is find a community, find safe people. If it's one or two, I cannot tell you the power of one or two good friends to change your life and your situation, to move you from surviving to thriving, so that when you share your story, it is empowering, it is uplifting, and it's not a bunch of fluff, it's not false. People can tell when you're just trying to sell something that you don't believe. But when it comes from a place that has been hard fought and you know that it's true, that is what people connect with. They don't connect with your perfection or your image. They connect with your vulnerability and your authenticity. I haven't read this book, but I am familiar with the author and a lot of the information that's shared in the book. It's called CPTSD, From Surviving to thriving, which is a lot of what we talked about today. So if you're looking for a resource, Pete Walker is the author. He has a podcast. He's been on many podcasts. He has a website that you can visit and read information and just educating yourself and equipping yourself with what you need to heal. I wanted to close with a quote that he has in there. He says, "As much as I can forgive myself, that much can I forgive others. What I often forgive in others is an old pain of mine, released from the disgust of self-hate. It is an old vulnerability of mine that I now love and welcome like a bird with a broken wing. Shame and self-hate did not start with me, but with all my heart, I deem that they will stop with me. I will do unto myself as I would have others do unto me." You can heal. You can move from victim to survivor to thriver when you let go of all those old scripts, the shame, the self-hate, again, the criticism, and decide that you are worth the journey. If you need help on your journey, I would love to come alongside you. Please feel free to reach out to me, Coach Andrea FAC, that's for Fully Alive Coaching, Coach Andrea FAC at gmail.com. You can go to my website, fullyalivecoachingllc.com, click the Get Started button and schedule a consultation. You can follow me on all social media. You can go back and listen to years and years of podcasts. I've been on other podcasts. There's so many ways that I am trying to help people find their way towards wholeness, to find their way towards the fully alive life, to a place where they feel like they are flourishing and thriving and blossoming into all that God has created us to be. You can call or text me 832-422-5480. And as usual, I would love for you to like, rate, share the podcast, leave feedback, send it to someone who you think will benefit from hearing the information that was shared here today. And if you don't feel ready to start the journey, if you feel like, you know, I'm stuck in this victim place, I want to say it starts with acknowledging. And if you need help moving from that, it's okay to reach out for help. It's okay to tell someone, "I feel stuck. I don't feel like I can go to the next step." And that's where finding safe people and community, doing the work to heal the trauma, is so powerful. And again, if you don't hear me say anything else, I want you to hear me say that you are worth it. You as an individual person, not because of any role that you play, but because you as an individual created in God's image are worth having a life that is thriving and flourishing and blossoming. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I appreciate each and every one of you. My heart is really filled with gratitude that I get to be in this place and do this work, that I get to meet people in their most wounded places and watch them go on the journey of healing. Thank you so much. As always, be sure to dream big, love well, and live fully. This is Coach Andrea signing off for another episode of Blow the Whistle.